Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Kathy Camper and Raoul III, a librarian, an artist, a pair of amazing storytellers who write comics about aliens, Aztec warriors, and tricked-out lowriders. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 302 of the podcast with Kathy Camper and Raoul III. I can't wait to share this episode with you, but first, here are some words you left on iTunes that gave me warm fuzzies. From Esperanza Edita, she says about the podcast, I truly believe that Matthew Winner is creating a priceless archive of exceptional conversations with the greatest creators of our time. Seriously, the Curlin Collection should think about ways to add them to their famous archives. Children's literature is at the forefront of innovation, creativity, excellence, and craft. By sharing these intimate, thoughtful conversations, we are able to better understand the work that goes into creating these works of art and the ways we can share them with young people in our lives. Esperanza, my word, can you be my publicist? That is amazing. You're so kind. Another from Annoyed Chaperone, I love that name, says, this podcast is a must listen for anyone who loves children's books. I always learn something when I listen, whether it's about an author, illustrator, editor, or publisher, or about books I need to add to my must-read list or buy for myself, my family, or students. Plus, when you hear Matthew Winner laugh, it will make your day that much better. It is contagious. Come on now. That's amazing. How could I not share that? You're so sweet. Thank you, Annoyed Chaperone. I am not annoyed with you. You are lovely. Thank you for saying that All the Wonders is truly wonderful. We're very proud of what we're doing over there. The next one is from OGs. reads, congratulations to All the Wonders podcast on its 300th episode. Well, thank you. And thanks to Matthew Winner for allowing us to eavesdrop on his thoughtful conversations with authors and illustrators. OGs, you are welcome to eavesdrop anytime. I have two more to share with you. These are so wonderful. I love this. Do you love this? This one is from O Pish Posh. I hope I'm reading your name correctly. It says, All the Wonders is a must-listen for me as a writer, mama, and kidlit enthusiast. Host Matthew Winner's endless curiosity and enthusiasm, combined with a roster of fascinating guests, entertain, inform, and add to my gotta-read-it list week after week. You listen week after week? Thank you so much! That's amazing! And finally, this one was left on Halloween! This is from P. in Hoboken. I'm a children's book author illustrator, but it's so hard to get started in the studio each day. Then I listen to Matthew Winner's podcast, and I remember I'm not alone. There's a huge community of authors and illustrators walking the path like I am, and a bigger community of librarians, teachers, and kids They're sharing the joy. Matthew Winter brings us together and inspires me to pick up the pen. Join in. Yes, please. P and Hoboken, you need to pick up the pen. All of you need to pick up the pen. Write more books because I want to talk about them. Share them. We all want to love on your work. My word, I love that you're saying these sweet things and that you're willing to just take time out of your listening time and whatever you do to write those for me. It means a lot. I rarely get feedback on this on the podcast. So when you do that, it's amazing. So here's my thanks to you. It's going to take a couple extra steps, but I'm going to make it worth it. I have a bag of some All the Wonders smiley face buttons, and I would love to share them with you. If you post a comment or rate the podcast with stars on iTunes, I'll send you a button, but you have to email me. Email me at here, H-E-R-E, at allthewonders.com. And let me know that you rated the podcast through stars or a review. Just leave me a note and include your mailing address, and I'll send you a button anywhere within the U.S. If you don't live in the U.S., email me and I'll send you a personalized video message. I love that you're connected with the podcast. I love that you're driving me to keep doing more. I love that you're listening. I want to be able to thank you. All right, time for today's awesomeness. Kathy Camper and Raoul III return to the podcast today to talk about Lowriders to the Center of the Earth, the sequel to the amazing debut graphic novel Lowriders in Space. This book has more adventure, more crazy amazing art, more of the band of friends we came to love in the first book. Only now, there's Aztec warriors, and skeletons, and temples, and giant corn, and a wrestling match with a god. It's insane and so good. Those new to the series will love Kathy's bilingual text, Raoul's Bic pen illustrations, and all of the work that has gone into creating a comic for kids who seldom or never see their lives or their culture reflected in stories, much less in comics. Here's episode number 302 of the podcast with Kathy Camper and Raoul III. Welcome back to the podcast. Kathy, Raoul, together. Come on now. I'm excited you're
here.
Yay!
Yep.
Glad to be here.
It's pretty happy times right now, for sure.
Well, good. I'm glad it's happy times. You know, way back ages ago when I talked to you both separately, I heard tell, I think first from Kathy, that there might be a second book in the works, and I just about flipped out then. And now that I've held it in my hands and read it and, you know, done the most terrible, wonderful thing you can do, which is that I brought in my copy to school. So the kids were like, oh, let me take it home. And I denied them their copy and said, yours is coming in the mail one day. It's been great. Thank you for Lowriders to the Center of the Earth. Thank you for you working hard, being awesome. Thank you for coming to talk to me. You know, that's what I really like.
Well, thank you for inviting us to be here tonight.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, when you said you did the worst thing possible, I thought you were going to say you drew in the book.
No. But, you know, this book kind of, we've talked about this maybe before on record. This kind of is one of those books that you look at it and want to just draw because Rel, you use the tools that we have at our hands. That's so good.
That's right.
Yeah. Your Lowriders in Space was nominated for our state graphic novel award, for our state book award, the Black Eyed Susan book award. So we had hundreds and thousands of people, kids all over Maryland, reading it. And whenever I book talked it to kids, to be able to say to them, and the illustrator drew it all with pens, these, and I held them up in my hand. They were all like, what? And so to have them, I mean, they would be already, but to have them study your art that way, to have them look close and then be able to not just try to, you know, draw your characters or trace your characters, some of them like to trace over your art, but to have them have the tools to make it look even closer to the way you did it, that's just a really cool thing. I want to share that with you.
And you know what I really love about those pens, though, is, like, I'm about to start working on book three, and I've been like creating a lot of Bic drawings just in preparation, and I've got to say, I'm getting better and better at using those pens than I was like when I started book one. So nice. Even for someone like me who has spent like countless hours drawing with Bic pens, there is a lot of room to grow.
And it's a tool like that. I mean, to even think that whatever tool that we're holding, whatever tool we're drawing with, that you take for granted, maybe you've your whole life used a pencil, but still there's room to grow with that pencil. There's room to grow with that pen. Also, nice job just dropping out there that you're doing a third book. Well done on that. Well, you know,
Yeah, high
I'm working on
five.
big three, on book number
Well, you
three.
know, I'm glad that it's almost winter because I won't have any reason to go outside, so.
Oh, there you go. Get the work done. Well, that's exciting. Kathy, I'm glad you're back with this awesome book that blends English and Spanish and awesomeness and lowriders. And really, the thing I kept remembering about when we last talked was that you're a public librarian and this is your population. You wanted to write a book for these kids because there wasn't anything for these kids.
Well, and I think now, with the book two, it was kind of cool because there was a lot of things that were answered that we didn't know in book one. Like we started to know who was reading our book because we were hearing from them and seeing them
Yes.
and meeting them, our readers. But also, I knew I was writing a book for Raul to illustrate. When I wrote book one, I wrote it just myself first, so I didn't know what it would look like. So when I started book two, I asked Raul, what do you want to draw and draw a lot of? Because you're going to have to, So I think book two had some things that I could channel right to the audience. And because I work with kids, I'd go to after school projects and I'd be, okay, so what do you wish you'd have books about? And it was like Chupacabra, La Llorona,
Yeah, I love
monsters,
that the answer is I want to draw things that are even more complicated to draw than outer space things.
Yeah.
That's
Well, Raul
amazing.
told me bats and bones. So that, between what he told me and what kids were saying that they wanted more of, you can tell right where the book went.
Oh, it lands right there in such a sweet spot to think. I mean, like, first off, I knew nothing going into what the second book would be, where it would go. So to take it out of space and to go down into the depths, and also to bring out all of these legends, all these myths, all of this, you're rooting the story in a different place here, that allows for such fantastical things to happen in the story. That was such a wonderful direction to take it in, and one that, just one that I was sort of freaking out a little bit. Every page I read, I was like, oh my word, look at this next thing happening. Which is why I say I did the worst thing I could possibly do to the kids, which is that I brought it in and showed them. And then I was like, I'm taking this back. You don't get to have this yet.
Well, I even felt like I was exploring along with the characters, you know. When I started to illustrate the pages, I thought to myself, well, you know, I'm gonna be going along with Lupe and Elerio and Flapjack on this long road trip, and what are some of the things that you see along the road? And so, you know, I would draw in little like large Olmec heads
Yes.
and just like make the terrain as interesting as it is in real life, you know, when you're traveling to this unknown place that you've never been to before. And of course, well, since they're going into to the center of the earth, it just got a little hot and heavy
Yeah, and I think
and spooky.
it's spooky,
if
putting it lightly.
despite how goofy and silly it was, there's also sort of that mythic thing of going on a road trip or going on a journey. There's a lot of sort of classic tales about people doing that, and I think not almost subconsciously, some of the things sort of ended up having a kind of weight to them in a good way that we didn't plan on, like the giant corn, which I think
Yes.
Raul, I was saying to Raul, I was visiting in October and I think we were looking through the newspaper and there was a corn maze and one of us said, oh, why don't we put a corn maze in it, So it ended up in the story. But it
Jeez.
doesn't, it feels like, I think because it's like these mythic tasks they have to accomplish, and there's all this stuff, and we kind of played with the some of the Aztec mythology, because a lot of it is very much like a comic, you know, like superheroes or heroes type stories.
Well, I think the direction you took it is it's so fun to look at and to look at all the details. And Raul, I think all of the hand lettering you do on like every sign, every turn, every like everything advertising the new location where we're arriving in, which is totally a road trip thing, but the way you play with that and take it in that theme of temples and skulls and skeletons and things like that, just really again, I go back constantly with this book probably more than any other book in my library to a kid looking at it and studying it and seeing things to do with it. Because I have kids that fill notebooks full of stuff that they draw and things that they see. And it just feels, this book feels like one of those stories to me.
Yeah, well, you know, all of those signs, it's what makes like the world so fascinating. You know, like I really love going into neighborhoods or towns where the signs are written in different languages, and I have no idea what anything says, and it all feels so mysterious to me. But the lettering is beautiful, you know. And then there's these like cakes and foods that I've never had before, and I don't know what I'm gonna get, but I'm gonna give it a shot and see if I enjoy it. And that's pretty much what I try to do with the drawings, you know. I throw in like signs written in Spanish, you know, and it just makes, to me, the world funner to explore.
Yeah, I can imagine. Hey, Kathy, when you were writing this, I think we talked last time a little bit about what it looks like to write a graphic novel that you're not illustrating, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this time around, knowing that Raul was going to be illustrating it, did that change at all the way that you wrote, like format of how you wrote?
Well, I think so. I mean, the other thing that I learned from the first one, like the first one I wrote, it could have been a picture book or a graphic novel when I was pitching it. I didn't know which way it would go. So that has a narrative voice. And the plus of that is that the first book is really works well to read aloud. I've had a lot of parents tell me that, you know, they've read it and their 2-year-old liked it because it has a narrative, and a lot of graphic novels don't have that. But I dropped that in the second book because I wanted it to be more action. And I also realized, like unlike a novel, a lot of the actual dialogue is kind of flat in a graphic novel. Like they say, look, you know,
right.
And then the drawing shows what it is. And I didn't know that, you know, when I wrote the first book, because it might have been a picture book or, you know, I might have needed more narrative. But the second book, I pulled back a lot, and there's more in the instructions and less, you know, in the writing. But also, I think that there's things where Raul and I are really lucky that we can talk about stuff, whereas in most relationships, like a picture book, the editor does the communication. So there's things that Raul and I, you know, I'll say, okay, there's this really cool joke, and we'll kind of divide up. Is it going to be in the pictures or is it going to be in the text, you know? And so that, I think, is really fun that we can kind of plot that. Or, you know, Raul might, once he draws a character, say, oh, they should say this, you know? So we kind of mold it besides the official editing that's going on.
But you had something, you had a manuscript laid out and then sort of collaborated with Raul throughout.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what happens is, like, I write the text and then it goes back and forth with me and the editors through several drafts, and then once they, you know, feel like it's finished, then it goes to Raul and the art director.
Okay.
And so, but I mean, just the fact that Raul and I can call each other up and go, hey, on page 71, what do you think? You know, I mean, that doesn't normally happen. So I think that there's things that just in reading it, you can kind of tell the playfulness and, you know, some of the it's just richer that way, I think.
And there's a lot of spontaneity involved as well. You know, like, I'll get to a scene where it's going to be the wrestling match, for instance, and
yes.
I'll just I'll just let the action kind of dictate like the movement, and then Kathy will come back and throw in some really funny jokes, and we'll go back and forth like that.
Oh, wait, I'm realizing that this whole time that we're waxing about how great this book is, that we haven't quite described for the listeners what we're talking about. So let me contextualize this in case they haven't read Lowriders in Space, and then Kathy and Raoul, I'll let you both share what Lowriders to the Center of the Earth is. Is that okay if I do the first book?
Go for it.
So in the first book, we meet these this group of friends that dream of having a car shop of their own, and there's a lowrider contest with a big prize. And ultimately, they end up souping up their lowrider by going into outer space and getting all of these like interstellar add-ons that make it really amazing. And it's such a good, positive, feel-good graphic novel. Like, there's no maliciousness in it. There's no like fighting or people out to get you or anything. It's just sort of an awesome story. And then continuing in this one, Kathy, why don't I let you take over for Lowriders to the Center of the Earth?
Well, you set me up, but because at the end of book one, their cat goes missing. Jeannie, their cat goes missing. So there's kind of that little trailer, like when you watch a movie at the very end after the credits. The same with the book one. If you read the end, it's like their cat's missing. So road trip. And so in the beginning of book one, they still haven't found Jeannie, their cat. So they set off on a road trip to find their cat, which leads them down into the center of the earth. And the reason I was laughing, Matthew, is because this book, unlike the first one, there is sort of a malevolent guy they come up against, and his name is Mictlantecuhtli. He's the Aztec god of the dead, and they discover that he's swiped their cat.
and you better not mispronounce his name.
No, he does not like that.
not for the sake of offending the author or illustrator, but for the sake of offending the Aztec god.
Yeah.
I noticed when I was, working back and forth with the editors, they kept calling him just Mick because it was so long to type his name out and try to pronounce it. But I actually had fun with that because I thought, when you're a kid and you run into one of these really long names that you can't pronounce, it drives you crazy. So of course, our characters can't pronounce his name either. But so I don't know. What else should we tell him, Raoul?
I think that's great. There's a giant wrestling match. There's a guy with eyeballs all over his chest. I mean, what else do we want to get into here? he moves up from the ranks
monsters.
He moves up from the ranks of like wrestling goat skeletons and animal skeletons to people. Like, come on, it's amazing.
Raoul also
uses different colors in the drawings.
That's one of the things. I went really crazy with this book, and because we had thought up that corn maze during this random meeting we had up here in the Northeast, I had to go all out and use green Bic pens.
It's in the lime green. It's there. That it peeks out. It's good. In fact, when I was reading it at night in my bed, I was like, am I seeing green or is it like the darkness, like my little book light looking off of things? No, I think that it's insane that you have drawn so much that you've drawn on the page. You told me before, though, I think that you sketch it out first, right, in pencil, and then you go over top in pen? Or are you free running like a kid? You're just like, I'm just going to draw and keep adding more stuff into it.
No, I wish I could do that. No, there's a lot of planning that goes into the making of any one of these pictures, you know? But, you know, once I have, like, the overall flow like correct, then I do end up adding in a lot of extra details, and sometimes there are details that neither Kathy nor Taylor nor Neil know about until the very end, and they're like, whoa, what the heck is going on here?
Well, so, I would argue if anyone has ever had a notebook and drawn with pen that you can't leave space blank. You just can't. Your pen wants you to do more.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes I look at it and I'm like, hey, what why did I put that there? Or where did that come from?
Well, and I think the other thing is Raul and I, it's kind of frustrating because we don't really work together. Like right now I'm writing book three, but you know, when it's done, when the editors approve it, then it moves on to Raul. So a lot of times we're not, you know, both inundated in it at the same time. Like I'll be all like trying to figure out and write stuff, but Raul isn't in it yet. And then when he's in it, I've moved on. So I'm trying to remember like what happened there, you know? So there's kind of this time lag that spreads it out more.
Yeah. Hey, Kathy, can I ask you like a really detailed focused
sure.
question? When you're writing, just to wrap my brain around this, when you're writing a graphic novel, as you do, and not illustrating it, when you're writing it, and maybe even people that do both still follow the same process, but when you're writing, do you lay out, like, in terms of how detailed do you go? In terms of panels? In terms of pages? Or are there page breaks at all? I mean, there must be some...
Oh, yeah. It's like writing a movie script, kind of. And what I try and do, like, Raul likes to choreograph it and break it into panels.
That makes sense.
I do it very loosely so that, you know, I try to kind of group the action so that, you know, like it's good to have something cool at the page turn that'll lead you on to the next page.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't want to have like loads and loads of text on one page and nothing on the next. So I try to kind of keep that even. But as an artist, he likes to do that. And I respect that. Some artists want you to tell them exactly what the panel is. And, you know, they only want to draw by your instructions. So it kind of depends who you're working with.
So you're leaving broad illustration notes. Like there's a big monster. He has these qualities to him, but you draw it and make it look cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I remember hearing the Tamakis talk about their graphic novels, and I can't remember who writes and who draws, but that the writer said she was very broad on things. Like if there's a fight scene, she'd just say fight scene or something. And, you know, so people that collaborate have different methods of doing it, you know. But the one thing that I'll say that's really frustrating in a graphic novel is you're working with page spreads. So let's say I want to add a page in, you have to add two pages because otherwise the page turn will be all off on everything you've written.
Okay.
Or if you want to take out a page, you have to take out two pages. So now after I'm working on the third one, I feel like I've kind of got a better handle on that, but it's hard to sort of relax the way you would if you were writing a novel and just go, oh, I'll just go off in any direction, because you're always on that grid and to some degree the panels in the page too. Like I just told my editor for book three that I'm just going to write it right now and not care about how long it is, and then we can go back and edit it, because I just feel like I need that freedom not to worry about counting so much. You know, it's tricky.
Who's editing it? Did you say Taylor Norm's editing it?
Yeah, Taylor's editing.
Right on.
I think she also mentioned on the third one, she said, I think she picked up that, you know, a lot of it, you know, like the first book, nobody had worked on a graphic novel before. The editors, the artist, Raul and I. So there was tons of hands in it, tons of editing, and, you know, and this one is much smoother. So I think we've worked out a lot of stuff just because we've figured out processes. And just like Raul said, working with pens, he's learning stuff. Same with me writing, same with them editing. Yeah. You know, we're all honing it kind of.
Are you at a place where you're, when you're writing now, like book three, or maybe this is the way you started and no longer do it this way, but are you approaching the story by like making some massive outline that you're breaking down and breaking down and breaking down until you get, you know, like 120 pages or whatever that is, like 60 spreads? Or do you just sort of go as the author, sort of just go by what feels right and then figure out where the breaks would be later?
Well, I had an outline of what I wanted the story to be. So then I kind of fit it into, you know, 100 to 120 pages. And then now I'm getting editorial feedback. So I'm going through on other drafts, and that gets really, I mean, like I said, okay, let's say I pull out, you know, 5 pages and move it over here, but then you've got all those panels and shifts to do. You know, it's not like a novel where you just cut and paste it. So that's where I'm at now. And like, I think another thing about, well, about this book that happens in the other two books, like a lot of people, they kind of have one story, but we have a lot of stories going on. And I mean, it's obvious in the pictures, but also in the writing. You know, there's like, I mean, there's the plot that's going on, but like, for example, in book two, there's all the puns and there's, you know, subplots. So it's like building all those layers is also hard. It feels like juggling a lot of balls that you got to keep up in the air. You know, like I'm going, well, this is happening with Illyrio, but this has to happen with Flappy. And then I have to have this overall arc. And, you know, it's a lot. I think the other thing that's really tough is when Raul is starting to do the artwork, but we're still working from the script. Until you get the two in one document, it's really crazy because you're trying to edit the script to match the pictures, but they aren't together yet, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, geez.
Yeah. So I know that, you know, I think we all kind of feel relief when they, so when they fit the type into his drawings, when it gets to that point. But, you know, when he's still just doing pencils and, you know, then he's like, well, I'm changing this and this, then I have to go into the script and cut that. You know, it's just awkward and tedious for a while.
I make everybody's life hard for a little bit.
No. And I mean, you know, the other thing is Raul's getting feedback just like I am from the art director. So like when you said, do you draw it all through? Even if he does, sometimes, you know, I feel for him because he'll have this awesome drawing and then they'll say, we want that drawing, but everybody facing a different direction or something.
Oh,
you know,
no, just, that oh Lord.
You know, it's just, there's so much that gets thrown out or redone, or, you know, you can't get very precious about any of it because, and I think it's a lot like doing film, you know, it's a collaboration. It's not, like how a lot of film directors get mad when somebody writes a novel and wants to come in and write the script, but they don't want anything changed. You know, it's like, you couldn't be that way.
To be a novel. Yeah. They're two different. Yeah. I see that. Raul, do you have a favorite thing to draw?
Usually it's whatever I'm working on at the moment, you know? Yeah. I really enjoy I love drawing more, making art more than anything. As soon as I'm like in front of paper and I can just allow myself to step into that panel or that world or that painting, I'm in a good place, you know.
I remember looking on your website and seeing that you've got paintings and stuff that you've done, that you work in other medium, of course. And it always, for some reason, makes me think, and it must be because there's some graphic novel that I've read that does this. I can't even think of what it is. But it always makes me think like about including fan art in the back of your book. But instead of it being fan art, being like your different style on your own stuff, like what this would all look like if it was like high, like oil painted, whatever.
You know, I really love like different kinds of projects, you know, so whether I'm working with a gallerist or with a museum or a community group or with Kathy and the our team in Chronicle, it just keeps life fun and exciting, and so anything that I'm drawing at that moment is pretty awesome. Like I loved drawing, for instance, Elenio in his boxers, you know. That was cool. I love drawing the coyote at the beginning of the
Four Days. We should tell him about the coyote because we didn't talk about him.
I love drawing the coyote and the way the he had like little chickens like eating at his feet, and he's the guy who helped them through the corn maze. And then of course, like once I got to drawing the villain, I remember thinking, like, when I designed him, I was like, oh my God, what have I done? There's this dude is terrifying. He's got like, he's super built and he collects eyeballs and snaps bones. And Kathy had said he wears a necklace of eyeballs, and I gave him an entire chest plate, and his shoulders were gigantic eyeballs, and to top it off, his cape is like optic nerves that trail yeah. behind him, you know, like, oh my God, they are totally gonna like, they're gonna put a big red X over this guy. But you know, fortunately, like, I sent it in and everybody was like, oh my God, this dude is amazing.
Oh, good. And then
I, of course, I had, since he was so amazing, I just had to give him my very own hairdo. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
No, I love
it. It's just a lot of fun. It's just a lot of fun.
Whatever you're working on. I mean, I love that you continue to just be involved in so many different things. I'm sure that making Lowriders keeps you really, really busy. I would imagine drawing, if it's 120 pages, you're drawing something like 400 panels worth of art or something crazy.
I don't like to think about the particulars, because I mean, if you start thinking about that, like, it could drive you mad, you know?
Well, and I think one of the funny things is, like, you know, like, sometimes Raul and I will kind of coordinate, like having to draw tons and tons of cars, it takes a long time. So we'll write scenes where the car is there, but not the main scene, or things to try and, you know, make it doable instead of overwhelming, you know?
Nice. Yeah, like, I'll hide the car behind, like, a pile of skulls. That way you only see like the back tire, you know?
You know, one thing, Matthew, that I can say about fan art is that we've started to have amazing feedback from our fans. And in a lot of different ways, like we got a cool fan in Japan that sent Raul some fan art. And there was a family that for Halloween and cosplay dressed up as the three lowrider characters.
This year?
Yes. Yes, and if you look on our Facebook sites, we post stuff when people send it to us, and then we've had tons of kids, you know, we've done workshops with them and stuff, but kid art, that's amazing.
Oh, man.
So
I am linking to that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'll send you the pictures of that. That way you can have it up on the site or something.
I love that. I mean, this is, of course, we know that this is what children do, that that you make a book, you labor over it for years, and when it comes out, it becomes the readers, they have a portion of ownership in it, so it was only natural that there would come a time when they were responding back to you in their words and in their drawings. But
well, cool. And also, like right now, I'm working on an article. It's for this really cool anthology. It's going to be called Librarians with Spines. It's about alternative librarianism, but it's I'm writing an article about how lowriders in space built a community, because I think one of the things we were doing besides just putting a book out there was building a community. And part of how we publicized it was very different from how a lot of books get publicized. You know, I mean, just the commercial publication. Like I went to Reforma and Raul presented at Latino Comics Expo. So we were connecting with an audience. You know, like I said, when I first or thought it up, it's like there's this big hole, it needs to be there. So now yes. On the other side, we're connecting. And one of the coolest things is we're starting to have lowriders show up at some of our things,
yes.
too.
Yes. So. Oh, you're so smart. You're so smart to
like
make a book like that.
Right?
That's the best. Yes. Oh,
to
man.
Get to, I did a thing at the Mission District, and there was a lowrider, so I actually got to sit in one when it hopped, and I felt like this is full circle, you know. It was it. Like, yeah. and Raul was at something in Texas where they showed up too, right?
That's right. I was out in Midland, and they brought some lowriders by. It was pretty magical.
That's cool. It's cool to be writing for that community, for those readers, and also like I constantly am thinking, when you're writing these books, especially when it's comics, because they get consumed so quickly, and because they get children make their own comics so rapidly, it's so easy for them to read a graphic novel and then want to just make a comic. That's a thing that happens. But to have that be happening with this book, and to be inspiring a group of children that they could see themselves in this book and see, oh, I can make comics too. This is another option for me to express my creativity. I think that's really a neat thing, to be reaching a different group of children that way.
For
Well, and I
sure.
think Raul spoke to a group of a national thing for ESL teachers, and I've been getting a feedback from, like teachers working with at-risk kids, and it's like all these things that we had hoped where our book might reach out, it's working fantastically. So that is super exciting in a way that's like it's not about, a commercial thing. It's like
Yeah.
connections.
My connection, Kathy, that I don't think we've talked about before, but I can now because before Lowriders in Space wasn't out when we talked, and now this is they're both out. But at my school, we're a K-5 school, and we have Spanish immersion classes in K-5, and our world language teachers are aware of this book and have brought it into classes and have shared. I love that you've got as you did in the first book, you've got these footnotes that are regularly occurring, that we have books in Spanish or words in Spanish and phrases in Spanish, and it's not just a smattering here and there, but it really is a presence, and it's natural language to be in there. And so I think there's a lot of things going on here that it's just this beautiful gift to the reading community that there are probably things that you couldn't even anticipate would resonate with readers the way that they are, and how beautiful then that you're getting to see that reflected back to you.
Well, and we just won an award, right, Raul?
That's
You
right.
won
We
an
won
award.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's called the Aesop Award, and it's from the Folklore Society. And it was just for book two, for the things you mentioned, because of the good annotations and the use of folklore, and that it wasn't just a fractured fairy tale, but that there was a lot of good information about Aztec culture included in the book. So that was really touching to me as a librarian.
Congratulations. Yeah. That validation from like a however you phrase that, like a professional institution, something like that, from people that look at books critically, in addition to alongside of kids who love books and also look at things critically in their own way, to have it valued in those two different places is really something special. And then for you to both be saying about a book three, I mean, I feel like that's the right thing right there. And how great that Chronicle, who previously didn't have graphic novels, has you and has Lowriders and has this unique and special thing. How fitting for that publisher. They do things differently, and this is a different kind of graphic novel.
No, I think we're really excited, and I also feel like I tell people I feel like our book is also for the future because a statistic I read recently is that the biggest growing ethnic group in the U.S. is multiracial, and yet you see very little talk about that or even books addressed in that way for kids. And I feel like although, it's obviously English, Latino in our book, when I think about writing them, I think about the kids I see. So, like one school I went to in Portland, which is really white, had kids that were speaking 31 different languages. So, partly I have the glossary because I can't expect a kid from Burma to know what a tortilla is,
Yes.
But yet I love when I see kids like I always use this example as a librarian. There was when I was in Minneapolis, there was a bunch of middle school girls that were from Somalia that loved manga. And I was like, what are they going to write when they grow up?
I was
What will
just
that
gonna
be like?
say that. How does it get filtered through this thing that is obviously reflecting one particular culture? How does that get filtered through your own experiences to become something different? That's going to be what we're all excited to see.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times subconsciously, people that do kids' books, they kind of push what their childhood was or what they want to remember. But I also like writing something where kids are now, which is kind of this cool blend of a lot of different stuff. So, and I think just even Raul and I working together and being Arab American and Latino, we're coming from all these different East Coast, West Coast, different things. And I want to be hopeful and think that in the future there's going to be more and more of that,
Absolutely.
Well, you've done a beautiful job with this book. I can't think of a better place to leave off our conversation than bring it back to the children. So I'm going to ask you each this final question. And Raul, I'll start with you, and then we'll give Kathy the last word.
Okay.
Bringing it back to those children, I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Kathy, you might too. And, you know, for all I know, Raul, you could see those too. I'd love to know, what message would you like for me to bring to them from you?
Oh, well, I would say that no matter what you are doing at the time you are doing it, to just enjoy it as much as you possibly can and just be right there doing it. Be for the moment, I guess I would say.
That's wonderful. And
Kathy, in my convoluted words.
You're in the moment, man. Enjoy it. You are in the moment. Kathy, same question for you. What message?
Well, I guess, what I tell kids is if you want to be creative, you have to daydream a lot. And don't pay attention when adults tell you you can't, because that's the best way to come up with new ideas and, you know, things you want to do, whether it's write or invent or draw, you know.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Grace Lynn returns to share When the Sea Turned to Silver, a new companion book to Where the Mountain Meets the Moon and Starry River of the Sky. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.